Imagine borrowing, let's say, $1 billion to run your company.
Right, a casual billion.
Yeah, exactly, just a casual billion. But the contract contains this hidden, highly sensitive trapdoor.
Oh, the trapdoor.
Right. If your company fails to reduce its carbon footprint, or if the planet gets warmer because you missed your internal targets, your debt suddenly becomes millions of dollars more expensive.
Overnight.
Literally overnight, you are paying a very real, very harsh financial penalty for failing to be sustainable.
Which is wild when you think about it.
It is. And welcome to this deep dive, by the way. Today, we are unpacking exactly how that trapdoor works.
Because it's a sweeping shift in how global capital actually operates now. We're moving away from, well, away from vaguely defined good intentions and tying corporate promises directly to the cost of money.
And to figure out how this is actually being enforced, we've brought a pretty substantial stack of sources to the table today.
We definitely have.
We are pulling from the official June 2024 Sustainability-Linked Bond Principles.
Often referred to as the SLBP, just to save us some syllables.
Thank you. Yes, the SLBP. Along with a series of analyst notes, financial research papers, and case studies on how corporate issuers are navigating this new reality.
Which is tricky, to say the
It's
least.
extremely. So our mission today is to look at these principles specifically through the lens of a corporate issuer. Because if you're trying to understand how companies are held accountable, or if you're simply fascinated by how global finance is rewiring itself to deal with climate change, this framework is the blueprint.
A completely vital blueprint.
Yeah.
But to truly understand why these 2024 principles are so revolutionary, we first have to contrast them with what came before.
Right, the traditional stuff.
Exactly. For years, the gold standard was the traditional green bond, or a sustainability bond. But those functioned very much like a restrictive gift card.
A gift card, I like that.
Yeah, they were tied to a strict use of proceeds model.
Sure.
So a company raises $100 million, but they're legally bound to spend that exact money on a specific, isolated green project.
Like building a solar farm.
Right, or retrofitting a building to be energy efficient.
Which is great for that one project, but what about the rest of the company?
Exactly the problem. You could issue a green bond to build this beautiful zero-emission corporate headquarters while simultaneously running a fleet of highly polluting diesel trucks on the other side of your business.
And the green bond doesn't care.
It doesn't care about the trucks at all. It only cares about the headquarters.
Wow.
But a sustainability-linked bond, or an SLB, flips that entirely. It is forward-looking and performance-based.
So it's for general funding.
Yes, the funds are for general corporate purposes. The company can use the cash to pay salaries, expand operations, buy new software, whatever.
Okay.
But the bond itself, the actual interest rate the company pays, is tied to their overall holistic future performance.
It reminds me of like an executive bonus structure, but weaponized in reverse.
That's a good way to put it.
Right, because instead of a CEO getting a cash bonus for hitting a revenue target, the entire corporation faces a sweeping financial penalty for missing a sustainability target.
Exactly.
But I mean, getting a massive influx of general funding while making broad, overarching promises sounds like a recipe for empty PR.
Oh, absolutely.
I can just picture an oil executive saying, "Sure, give us the $1 billion. We promise to be greener." How do these voluntary June 2024 guidelines actually prevent greenwashing? Like, how do they force real accountability?
That is where the rigor of the framework really comes in. The SLB principles aren't just a philosophical guide.
Right.
They are a highly detailed operational checklist.
Sure.
If a corporate issuer wants their bond to be accepted as credible by global investors, they have to move past vague promises and define exact metrics.
Okay.
So the credibility of the entire multi-million-dollar bond rests on selecting the right KPI, the key performance indicator.
Yeah.
This is the first core component.
Wait, so if I'm that oil executive, I can't just promise to install LED light bulbs in my refineries, measure the energy saved, and call that my KPI.
No, absolutely not.
The metric has to actually hurt a little, right? It has to hit my core operations.
Precisely. The guidelines are adamant that the KPI must be material to the issuer's core sustainability and business strategy.
Okay, so no irrelevant metrics.
Right. It cannot be a secondary thing used for good PR. Let's look at a real-world scenario.
Go for it.
Imagine a vast global shipping and logistics company. A core material KPI would be their Scope 1 and Scope 3 greenhouse gas emissions.
Which is essentially the exhaust from their cargo ships and what the indirect emissions from their supply chain.
Exactly. That is the existential environmental challenge of their specific industry. What they absolutely cannot do is issue an SLB where their KPI is, you know, reducing paper consumption in our administrative offices.
Right, because nobody in the financial markets is going to give you a discount on a $1 billion loan just because you stop printing memos.
Exactly. It has to be a metric that actually moves the needle on global sustainability.
But how do you even measure something as complex as a supply chain's carbon footprint in a way that investors will actually trust?
It requires intense methodological consistency. The chosen KPI has to be measurable on a continuous basis and, crucially, externally verifiable.
Right.
And to prove that your future goals are meaningful, you first have to prove where you are starting from.
The starting line.
Yes. The guidelines require companies to establish a baseline by providing at least 3 years of externally verified historical data for their chosen KPI.
So you have to show your receipts.
You do. Investors need to see the historical trajectory. If your emissions have been completely stagnant for the last 3 years and suddenly you're promising a steep drop,
investors need to know that's a massive shift.
Right. And conversely, if you've already harvested all the low-hanging fruit and made easy reductions over the last decade, your baseline proves that the next phase of reduction is going to be genuinely difficult.
Okay, so we've established the unit of measurement, the material KPI, and we have 3 years of historical data to prove our starting line.
Yep.
But a metric is just a ruler, you know? You still have to draw a line in the sand.
Which brings us to the second component.
Right, because how hard does the goal actually need to be? If a company gets to pick its own metric and then sets its own target, couldn't they just deliberately engineer a low bar goal?
A total layup, yeah.
Yeah. They set a target they know they'll easily hit in their sleep just to reap the financial rewards.
That is the most profound vulnerability in the entire system. And it is exactly what the calibration rules are designed to eliminate.
Oh, interesting.
Once you select the KPI, you must set a sustainability performance target, or SPT.
SPT, got it.
This is the exact number you promised to hit by a specific observation date. And you cannot just pull this target out of a hat.
I would hope not.
The SLBP outlines strict benchmarking rules to guarantee genuine ambition.
Walk me through those benchmarks. Like, who decides what counts as ambitious?
The target must be benchmarked against three distinct pillars. First, your own past performance.
Okay.
Your target needs to represent a material improvement, pushing the company significantly beyond a business-as-usual trajectory.
So if you've been reducing emissions by 1% a year, historically,
your new target can't just be another 1% reduction. It needs to show a steeper curve.
Makes sense. You aren't getting rewarded for coasting.
Exactly. Second, you must benchmark against your peers. What is the average performance in your specific sector? What does best-in-class look like?
So if your supposedly ambitious target still leaves you trailing behind your competitors, investors will see right through it.
They absolutely will. But the third pillar is perhaps the most critical. Targets must be benchmarked against hard science.
Now, this is where the research notes get really fascinating. We aren't just talking about corporate incrementalism anymore.
Oh, not at all.
We're talking about aligning a company's financial goals with actual planetary survival metrics.
Yes. The 2024 principles place a heavy emphasis on systematic reference to science-based scenarios.
What does that mean in practice?
It means aligning your corporate target with things like the Paris Agreement and the 1.5 degree Celsius temperature rise objective.
Or the Kunming-Montreal Global Biodiversity Framework.
Exactly. The target should be driven by what the scientific consensus says is necessary to prevent climate catastrophe.
Hmm.
Not just what the company's board of directors feels is economically comfortable.
Right, but ambition is still kind of a subjective word. A corporate treasurer might look at a target and say, trust us, based on our internal projections, this is incredibly hard.
Sure.
But investors aren't climate scientists. How do they know the company isn't bluffing?
Well, they don't rely on the company's word. The principles strongly encourage issuers to secure a second-party opinion, or SPO, before the bond goes to market.
An SPO? Who does that?
It's an extensive review by external experts like specialized environmental consultants or research firms. They assess the relevance of the KPI, tear apart the methodology, and evaluate the genuine ambition of the target against that hard science.
So they essentially provide an independent stamp of approval that the goal is rigorous.
Exactly.
So, okay, we have a core metric that hurts to change. We have an ambitious, science-backed target, and an external expert has verified that it's not a bluff.
Right.
But as we said earlier, talk is cheap in corporate finance.
Very cheap.
Promises mean absolutely nothing unless a company bleeds money for breaking them. How do these guidelines actually force a company to pay up?
This is the third component, and it's the financial engine of the SLB.
The trapdoor.
The trapdoor. The defining characteristic is that the structural or financial features of the bond must vary depending on whether the predefined target is reached.
There has to be a tangible, undeniable financial impact.
Yes, triggered by the outcome.
What does that impact look like in practice? Let's say our shipping company misses their emission target by the observation date, just by 1%. What actually happens?
The most common structural variation is a step up in the coupon, which is the interest rate paid to bondholders.
Okay.
If that shipping company misses their target, even by 1%, the interest rate they owe automatically increases on the observation date.
Wow. Let's put that into perspective. If they issued a $1 billion bond, and the penalty is, say, a 25 basis point step up, which is a quarter of a percent,
that company is suddenly paying millions of dollars more in interest every single year for the remainder of the bond's life.
Because their overall cost of capital spikes.
Exactly.
That is a brilliant mechanism. The CFO is suddenly directly financially incentivized to care about the carbon output of their cargo ships.
Because if they don't, the company's debt becomes significantly more expensive.
But let's stress test this, because the real world is messy. Businesses don't operate in a vacuum.
They certainly do not.
Let's imagine our shipping company sets a rigorous science-based carbon reduction target for 2030. But in 2028, they acquire a regional logistics company that relies on a fleet of incredibly old, highly polluting trucks.
A classic M&A complication.
Right. It's a strategic merger and acquisition deal that makes great business sense. But overnight, their overall corporate emissions skyrocket, completely blowing up their 2030 sustainability target.
Right.
Are they automatically hit with that multi-million dollar interest rate penalty?
This is where we get into the architectural brilliance of the 2024 principles. The framework recognizes that you cannot freeze a corporation in time.
What do they do?
You need a built-in prenuptial agreement for the bond. The SLBP requires that the bond documentation include highly detailed fallback mechanisms and recalculation policies.
Oh, wow. So you have to plan for structural chaos before you sign the contract.
Precisely.
Explain how that prenup works mathematically.
Yeah.
If they acquire that polluting truck fleet, how do they adjust the goalposts without cheating the system?
The documentation outlines precise rules for recalculating the original baseline.
Okay.
Let's say their baseline year was 2024. When they acquire the new trucking company in 2028, they don't just add the new emissions to their current ledger and fail the target.
That would be unfair.
Right. Instead, they retroactively recalculate their 2024 baseline to include what that acquired trucking company was emitting back in 2024.
Ah, I see. So they merge the historical data.
Exactly. They restate the baseline so that the curve of improvement remains comparable. It ensures the bond remains fair and accurate.
They aren't unfairly penalized for corporate growth.
But they also cannot use the complexity of the merger to hide the new fleet's emissions from their overall proportional commitment.
That is really smart. The rules dictate exactly how the scope of the KPI adjusts during extreme events or drastic regulatory changes.
Right. So every potential loophole, every corporate restructuring is addressed upfront in the fine print.
You can't just buy a clean company to instantly hit your target.
Nope.
And you aren't doomed if you buy a dirty one. The math simply recalculates to maintain the original level of ambition.
Correct. But even with airtight math, you still face the ultimate hurdle.
Which is?
Trust.
Yes.
When there are millions of dollars in potential interest rate step-ups on the line, the market cannot simply take the corporate treasurer's word for it.
Right. A company can't just release a glossy PDF report saying, "Great news, everyone. Our internal spreadsheets show we reduced our emissions. Please don't raise our interest rates."
Exactly. Trust us, we did the math ourselves. That doesn't fly.
Which brings us to the operational reality of proving the claim, which are components 4 and 5, reporting and verification.
Yes.
How do companies actually demonstrate, beyond a shadow of a doubt, that they hit these moving targets?
Transparency is non-negotiable. First, there is the reporting requirement. Issuers must publish up-to-date information on the performance of their selected KPIs at least annually.
Okay.
And this isn't just a raw data dump. They are required to report on any qualitative updates to their overarching sustainability strategy or changes in their ESG governance structure.
Why do investors care about the governance structure?
Because investors need to monitor the ongoing ambition behind the target. If the company changes its internal strategy to achieve the goal, or if they rely heavily on new technologies, the investors must be informed.
But the real teeth lie in the verification, right? How do investors know the data in that annual report is actually accurate?
This is the linchpin of the entire system. Post-issuance verification is strictly mandatory.
Mandatory?
Absolutely. Oh. An independent, qualified external reviewer, such as an auditor with specialized climate expertise or a major sustainability consulting firm, must verify the company's performance against each target.
And this happens every year?
At least annually. And it absolutely must happen on the specific observation date relevant to assessing the financial penalty.
What does that verification actually look like behind the scenes? Like, are auditors physically inspecting cargo ships?
Well, they are conducting rigorous audits of the company's data collection methods. If the KPI involves Scope 3 supply chain emissions, the auditors are verifying the integrity of the carbon accounting software used.
Checking the math.
Checking the invoices, tracking the fuel consumption logs, and ensuring that the emission factors applied match global scientific standards. They are making sure no data was omitted or manipulated to artificially lower the final number.
Which brings up a fascinating contrast. Earlier, we discussed the pre-issuance review, the second-party opinion assessing how ambitious the goal was.
Right, the SPO.
You mentioned that the guidelines only strongly encourage that step.
Yes.
Yet, this post-issuance verification of the data is strictly mandatory. Why draw that hard line? Why is one highly encouraged, but the other is an absolute non-negotiable requirement?
It comes down to the difference between theory and reality.
Okay.
Ambition, by its very nature, is somewhat subjective. A pre-issuance review is an expert judgment call predicting the future. It's an educated opinion on whether a goal is sufficiently tough.
Right.
But the post-issuance verification, that is tied to a hard, binding financial event. The moment a target is either hit or missed, millions of dollars in interest payments either stay flat or spike upward.
And you can't leave that to an opinion.
You simply cannot have a credible financial market where concrete monetary returns are dictated by unverified, self-reported metrics. Mandatory verification protects the investors from fraud, and it protects the integrity of the SLB as a legitimate financial instrument.
Which perfectly transitions us into a critical layer of this research that we just cannot ignore.
Oh, the portfolio effect.
Yes, because we've been looking at this from the perspective of a single corporate issuer, our hypothetical shipping company trying to secure a loan.
Right.
But if we pull back the lens, why must all companies care about this level of verified ESG data? Even if a mid-sized corporation isn't issuing a $1 billion public bond themselves, they still need bank loans to survive.
Absolutely.
And this brings us to what analysts call the portfolio effect. Break that down for us.
This is perhaps the most profound systemic shift in modern finance. Yeah. Financial institutions, the major global banks that lend money to everyday corporations, have their own sustainability targets. Many of the world's largest banks have made net zero commitments or issued their own green bonds. But a bank doesn't manufacture steel.
And it doesn't sail cargo ships.
Exactly. A bank's primary carbon footprint is its lending portfolio.
Oh, wow. So their Scope 3 emissions are literally the emissions of the companies they lend money to.
Exactly. The sustainability targets of financial institutions directly reflect the performance of their corporate clients.
That is wild.
It is. If a bank has promised its own investors that it will reduce the carbon intensity of its loan book, that bank can no longer afford to lend money to corporations that lack robust, verifiable ESG data.
Because it hurts the bank's own score.
Yes. So if you are a corporate treasurer at a mid-sized manufacturing firm and you don't have audited greenhouse gas metrics, or if you can't prove you are on a credible transition pathway,
you aren't just missing out on a PR opportunity.
No. You are actively becoming a liability to your bank's own sustainability targets.
You become toxic to their balance sheet.
Exactly. Having robust, verified ESG data isn't just about issuing a specialized bond anymore. It is rapidly becoming a prerequisite for securing any competitive commercial lending.
Wow.
If you cannot provide the data that banks need to satisfy their own overarching commitments, your access to capital will shrink, and the loans you can secure will become increasingly expensive.
It is a sweeping chain reaction.
Yeah.
The principles governing a multi-billion dollar sustainability-linked bond trickle all the way down to a standard commercial loan.
They really do.
It truly makes sustainability a fundamental survival issue for the CFO, not just a marketing campaign.
And that's exactly why these 2024 guidelines matter so much.
So what does this all mean for you, the listener? Whether you're a corporate executive structuring your very first financial instrument, or you're just an observer trying to understand how global capital is shifting to combat climate change, SLBs represent a monumental evolution.
A total paradigm shift.
It's no longer about ring-fencing funds for a single, isolated green project while the rest of the company pollutes as usual. It's about tying the fundamental cost of a company's capital to its holistic, verified impact on the world.
And understanding this framework, from selecting a core material metric and benchmarking an ambitious science-backed target, to structuring mathematical fallback clauses for mergers and securing mandatory software-driven verification that is the new baseline.
You have to know it.
You do. It forces entire corporate structures to align their daily operations with their long-term climate promises. Because if they don't, it directly and painfully impacts their bottom line.
But before we wrap up this deep dive, I want to leave you with a final provocative puzzle based on this framework.
I like puzzles.
It's a staggering risk that wasn't deeply resolved in the guidelines themselves, but it really haunts the analyst notes we reviewed.
I'm intrigued. What is the puzzle?
So if these bonds tie the cost of capital to highly ambitious, science-based targets on a strict, unmoving timeline,
right,
what happens to companies in what we call hard-to-abate sectors? Think about heavy cement manufacturing or long-haul aviation. What if a global airline sets a massive science-backed goal for 2035, relying entirely on the development of zero-carbon aviation fuel? But the actual technology required to achieve it simply isn't invented or isn't commercially viable in time.
That is a terrifying proposition for a corporate board.
Right.
They would face a harsh multi-million dollar penalty, a vast step up in their interest rates, not for a lack of genuine effort and not for a lack of capital investment, but entirely due to the unpredictable pace of global technological innovation.
Exactly. By issuing a highly ambitious SLB in a hard-to-abate sector, a corporation is basically taking a financial short position on the speed of human invention.
They really are.
They are betting their balance sheet that scientists and engineers will deliver the necessary breakthroughs before the bond's observation date arrives.
It's a massive gamble.
It is a fascinating high-stakes gamble for the modern corporate issuer to ponder. Will the technology arrive in time to save their debt structure?
We'll have to wait and see.
So the next time you hear a corporation promise to reach net zero by a certain date, ask yourself, is there actual money on the line if they fail?
Because if it's an SLB, there definitely is.
Because in the new era of corporate finance, promises are cheap, but the interest rates are very, very real. Thanks for joining us, and we'll catch you on the next deep dive.